Hello, hello. Okay, it's recording. Auto adjust recording. Yes, okay. So this is the work session for the May 4th town board meeting, starting at 5:30. Adding as a request to the board an item, a couple items to talk about. One is the West Genesee Sewer District financing. That came up yesterday. We'll have that discussion later in the work session when Dave Raleigh's here. That's some leftover business from, a couple administrations ago, having to do with the establishment of the district and grinder pumps and a bunch of things that were just never really wrapped up. So unfortunately,
we gotta wrap it up.
The other thing I wanted to talk about, it'll come to me at the end.
Well, there's one thing I wanted to talk about.
Yep.
Which was to task Tony with figuring out whatever we need to do to make sure that we accept the land from Alberici for Collington Point, that land is deemed forever wild, whatever covenant or whatever we got to call it. I don't know what we have to do, but that it's forever undevelopable.
There'll be a covenant right in the deed,
okay,
which runs with the land, which will restrict the use to forever wild.
How can that ever be reversed?
Can't.
Ever. Not by an act of Congress. I mean, what would it take? I guess anything could happen.
Theoretically, it could be condemned by somebody, you know, through eminent domain, it could be taken. But the covenant runs with the land, so it stays there. And the only way that you'd have a normal covenant that was changed is up to whoever made the covenant changed it. But once we accept it, it's forever wild.
So another town board 20 years from now can't
do anything about it.
Okay. Good. So does that satisfy that discussion point?
As long as,
okay.
We're going to own the land, Tony. We're not going to do anything with it. We're not going to deem it parkland, as far as I know, and I don't want to. I'm not suggesting we do. It's just
forever wild.
We just got to make sure that when we get the deed, which I will make sure, we get the legal description that outlines exactly what it is, so that we get a meets and bounds description.
Okay.
And there's the big piece of land, but there's also several little pieces.
Those little 10-foot stretches.
Oh, in the front?
Like the entranceway.
That should all be part of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what we might want to do, just as a town, if we don't ever want to touch it, if we don't want to maintain it, we might want to think about some sort of initial touch that allows it to develop in a way that doesn't become cumbersome. You know, it's not like you want trees growing in the right of way, blocking the views of people getting in and out of there. You know, there should be certain things that we do to prevent future maintenance, because we don't want to maintain it. But I'm sure there's things that we can do that can address that.
Sorry, I walked in late. You're talking about Collington Point, I'm assuming. There's a few of the pieces, like the piece that the backyards are going to back up to Patchett Road. I would suggest restrictions through setbacks on those lots on the plat plan. I would give that pieces to the homeowners. 90% of the time, my experience has been that homeowners will maintain those areas because they're their property and mold. Mm-hmm. That would be my recommendation. And then the areas, there's a couple small areas next to the entrance road
that's further east on
Patchett Road. Same thing with those. Make it a mowed area and grassed and turfed there and topsoiled and seeded, and people will take it as part of their lawn and they'll just mow it with their lawn. And put those, include those areas in the lot, and then just to prevent development through building setback lines on the final plat.
That sounds like a win.
I mean, that would be my suggestion.
Well, I don't know as if we can leave that just wild. You're going to get saplings. You're going to get growth, you know.
No, but what Al is saying, let the homeowner be responsible for it. But it's a setback because he can't ever put a shed on it or build upon it. It's just it's.
So just add it to the lot?
Yeah.
And have an easement on it?
No,
what do we need it for? Well, we'll have this, the 60-foot right-of-way along Patchett Road that we'll mow. And the rest of it would be the homeowner. If the homeowner doesn't mow right up to Patchett Road, the rest of the property would be the homeowner's responsibility. I mean, right now that area is brush and just scrub, box elders and willows and aspen trees.
So can't we just share that with the planning board and let them address that?
That's right in the planning board's wheelhouse.
That's one of my recommendations that I would make at the planning board level.
But the back piece we're talking about. Creating a covenant where it's forever wild.
Yep.
The small pond or the
the big
the wetland.
The wetland.
I mean we took possession of that. So in the first phase of Collington Point, we owned the wetland behind the first phase of Collington Point and the stormwater retention area. Stormwater retention area for this section of Collington Point is going to be. You know, at the downhill end of the slope, the north end of the property, basically our agreement is that we would take ownership and possession of that, and it would be town property that you could do like Tony's. I think that's what Tony was talking about with the covenant to keep it from being developed. Or anything done with it, yeah, you could
just pass a resolution and that memorializes it, right? And then you put that on to the
you file it
with the county.
Yeah, it's gonna be in the deed.
Okay.
See, the resolution that we pass can be changed by another board. Once you put it in the deed, they can't change that.
Okay. So. Good.
And was there a 15-20 foot buffer all the way around the property? Was that? Did I read that?
Yeah, there's an easement. There's an easement that we talked about. It was 20, wasn't it 25 feet? The 10 feet of it can't be touched.
You're talking about setback. Yeah, so there's going to be a buffer. They show a 10-foot buffer on the east and west property lines between the adjacent homeowner's property and the new development. Those areas are going to be left treed, undisturbed, and deed restrictions put on by Stacy when the deeds for each lot and when they file a final plat.
They'll be part of the homeowner's lot.
Correct.
Yep.
Okay. Correct. But he can't touch them.
Can't cut down the trees.
We want, because it's the purpose of it is screen.
Yep.
There are going to be trees in there. Are we going to, is there a drainage ditch there?
In this instance, we're going to have to make the drainage ditch in front of the trees to keep the tree, to keep the trees.
Yep. Yep.
Into the people's backyard. So, it'll ultimately, that 10-foot setback area, we might as well include it in the drainage easement. So we normally take a 20-foot drainage easement. In this instance, we take a 30-foot drainage easement and include those trees behind the swale in the easement.
Cool. Yep.
Right. Sounds like you got it figured out.
Okay, great.
Good deal.
Yeah. All right, so I'm going to wait till Dave comes in to talk about the West Genesee Sewer District. We're going to talk about that.
I've been struggle with MS4 report. I'll brief you as best I can, but I'm not totally.
Do you want to add the MS4 report discussion in work session?
Yeah, we can.
All right, so let's add that as well. MS4 report. So drainage work at Tom Collins' property. 1984. Good year. It was a great year. 84? Uh-huh. Mid-80s? Decade of Decadence? A lot of fun.
Good book, too.
I know, right? 92 was the best year.
92.
Okay? Just want to throw that out there.
So Tom Collins owns the lot on the corner of Rubicon and Penfold Way in...
And he made comments.
He made comments during the public hearing.
Yeah.
So he is...
There's a cabbage patch.
Here.
So here's the entrance road in. This is existing Rubicon. He's right here. We have an existing 25-foot easement across the back of his property. The plans currently show a improvement behind his property.
He's on this side or this side?
He's on this side.
This side.
So his lot is this lot right here. We currently show this swale being regraded with more manageable slopes for him to mow, makes it a little bit deeper. It really just cleans up. Last year I had the highway department up there to try to do some cleanup. Mr. Collins was really disappointed in that they mowed the shrub or the brush that was in the swale down with the roadside mower. It's really the only piece of equipment that we have to do it. He didn't like it. He thought it made it look, the trees look ragged and ratty. And
Just chewed them up.
I mean, I can say that this spring, what's left is all nice and green and leafed out, or in the process of leafing out right now. Mr. Collins really does not want to have anybody back there. It's pretty minor grading changes right now that are showing.
Does he not want the grading change?
He does not. He wants to leave it as is.
He doesn't want to lose the trees.
But really, the trees are already gone. it's really a matter of making it.
Is it our easement?
It is. It is.
Well, the first responsibility is to the neighborhood to make sure that it drains properly.
I mean, right now, there's no impediment in his property. It's just a rather steep bank that's hard. I mean, he's never going to mow it. That's the bottom line. And I think he would prefer not to have it mowed ever again.
But so I'm fine with not doing the work as long as he understands at some point we're going to go in there with our mower again and lay waste to whatever's in there that might be an impediment to the drainage swell. I mean, if he's comfortable with that.
What happens if, let's say, like we handle all the rest of it, but we leave his alone. What happens, Al, when stuff starts to grow up? Is this going to flood elsewhere?
No. This is a wetland here. There's no, you know, there's never going to be any development in this area because of the wetland. It's not going to, you know, push water onto somebody else's property that is usable property, i.e. it may push some more water into the wetland, but it's not going to negatively affect.
It's not going to affect the road.
Anybody
upstream.
It's not going
to affect Rubicon.
No,
it's not going to affect anyone upstream.
No.
And from here down, it'll drain because we'll do the work anyhow.
Correct.
I'd be more comfortable if he wrote a brief letter requesting us not to do the work so that if down the road he wanted us to do
the
work.
Well, we got the email from him. That was included in the agenda attachments.
So I think we got it.
That's it.
That's, I mean,
fine.
As long as I just wanted the board to say that before I said it. So if you guys are
so in your mind, is it the end of the world if we don't clean it out, brush it out?
No, it's not. It's not the end of the world. In some ways, I am hesitant to give in really what is a improvement to the drainage easement.
Yeah, but we still retain the right to go in there at any time.
Should it
pose a significant?
It doesn't set any kind of a precedent. We can.
Okay.
We need to do the work.
It's our easement.
Okay.
We'll defer the work.
Yeah. Tell them we're not going to go in now, but that doesn't mean forever.
In the future, we may. The town may be back
in
there.
Need to, yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah, 10 years from now, one of these trees that we don't.
I mean, we're still going to have to access between. There's a transformer pad back here on the corner of Rubicon, at the edge of the easement. When we do work in here, we're still going to access through there. That's our only point of access.
Rare.
It's not going to be on a regular basis, but that's our only point of access.
Yeah, so we're not surrendering an easement. Okay. We're just deferring work in that particular section.
Okay.
As long as you say that we don't need to do work, that's
I mean, at this point in time, there's nothing that's impeding flow of water off his property or through the easement and into the easement.
Okay.
And there's nothing upstream from him.
No, nothing. I mean, it's
the last.
Yeah, it's just Rubicon and what comes off of that guy's the guy on the other side of Rubicon's yard goes down into the existing street gutter and into the catch basin at the corner. So it doesn't carry across the road.
All right. So it's not the end of the world right now.
No.
Thanks, Al.
No, we might as well go right into Spray Park.
So I sent these. Joe and Tony and I met with Parkitects, who's on an OGS bid for the spray park equipment. They actually have an OGS bid for pavilions as well. I haven't gotten comments back from them.
I did.
I haven't gotten comments back from them at this point in time. I just asked them to look over what I had put together from a landscape architecture standpoint and you know, needs and an assessment of other projects that have been done. So the highlights here are I'm proposing a 32 by 60 pavilion. We've got 3 5-foot by 9-foot changing stalls that would just be a swinging door. Open on the bottom for ventilation, open on the top into the truss of the pavilion so that we wouldn't have a moisture problem and, you know, potential issues there down the road. The spray pad is 56 by 47, the actual wet area. And then there's a 5-foot dry area outside of the wet area with some park benches up against the fence. We have 7-foot sidewalks all the way around. You'll see an oval area or half a circle area to the west of the spray pad that's being installed now. That would be potentially a future expansion for a toddler play area, you know, littler kids play area. That was one of the comments that I heard in the meeting that I attended. I think that would be, if there was going to be an expansion, that would be a big part of it. We included some trees on the west side of the expansion area for shade and you know, and benches around that and the walk around that expansion area. Landscaping beds that are 4-foot wide adjacent to the east side of the spray pad just as a little bit of a visual screening and break up when you walk drive into the park. We could put some vending machines in front of the changing stalls in the pavilion. I included a small, and this was recommended by Parkitects when we met with them, a small attendant office or shed. I mean, I think this is something that is going to be, if it's open, you're going to want to have people monitoring it to make sure that, one, the equipment isn't being abused, two, if there is a mess, it's cleaned up promptly. I included 2 gates and for the gate closest to the parking lot to the east side of the spray pad obviously would be the main entrance gate. If parents are on the outside of the spray pad on one of these benches around the expansion area or one of the other benches around the site and something happens and they need to get to their children, it gives them a quicker access point. Or if kids are exiting to their parents because they got called over, it gives them a quicker exit route. The control panel would be sized to power and plumb the first phase and the expansion area in the future. You know, that's where we're at with it. Like I said, we asked we also included a runoff pond in this area here. What we've discovered is this drainage does not go all the way to Henkel Boulevard. It actually comes under Smoky Hollow Road on the north side of, what's the name of that development in the village?
Candlewick.
On the north side of Candlewick and crosses. And so it's a shorter route into U.S. waters.
A runoff pond is going to give us contact time so that the chlorination in the water that's used in the splash pad is dissipated before it is discharged into the U.S. waters.
How deep will that pond be?
We'll construct it like a stormwater pond. So you'll have an aquatic bench that is less than a 10% slope for the first 10 feet of it, and then we would make it approximately, we can go 4 to 6 feet deep, but it would be at a 1-on-3 slope after the aquatic bench. So you make it safe by gradual slopes into the pond.
You're not going to see water, standing water in there, though, are you?
Yeah.
That's we would make it into a pond. I'm a little concerned about the contact time for the chlorination of the water and then having chlorine discharged off the site, which would be a violation of our MS4 permit.
So drain tiles will run to the pond?
Correct.
Let the water lay in the pond?
Exactly. Flow through the pond, which will give a contact time with unchlorinated water. There is perennial flow through our drainage system in the park from the wetlands on the west side of the park. There's always, even last summer, as dry as it was, that was always flowing. There was never not a day when there was not water flowing through that that culvert that ultimately discharges in what's the front yard, we'll say, of the park entrance.
So why are you sure that there's going to be standing water in there?
He wants it.
Because we need it to be
standing water so we have enough contact time so we're sure that all the chlorine is dissipated.
If it runs out of there.
It reaches waters of the U.S.
Yeah, before it hits the stream.
I don't mean running out of there. You're saying that this thing is going to generate enough water to keep standing water?
Oh, no. There will be a discharge control structure at the outlet end.
No, so, I know. But what's going to create the pond?
An excavator?
No. Where's the water coming?
Oh, there's water always. So the drainage system through the park.
This
there's springs on the west side of the park. There's always water flowing through this drainage system. Even like I said,
so
The spray park is ancillary flow to what's already.
That's all I wanted to know.
Okay. So, yeah.
We have.
Just the sticking on the drainage, and so this area.
And this is conservatively sized in all likelihood. Once we actually get into design and do the calculations, the volumetric calculations for contact time, this will shrink. This is.
But I mean, do you see this thing being taken over by Phragmites and cattail?
Well, you're gonna in the aquatic bench. You're gonna have some aquatic vegetation, absolutely.
We're okay with that. I mean, we don't want to be maintaining this as a pond, do we? Or are we gonna have to maintain it?
No, I don't think so.
You want
a natural looking pond.
You want a natural looking pond.
Okay. It's important to point out why we prefer to drain into an open natural water source as opposed to, because we can't drain into the sewer.
Yeah, we're going to have to put in a much larger lift station.
But the county doesn't like us putting chlorinated water.
I mean, that's what Camillus is doing. It's really a bad practice from a environmental standpoint. WEP is going to basically our tax dollars are going to be paying to treat clean water.
Yeah, we don't.
So I'm very supportive of the spray park idea. I think this is a phenomenal thing for Lysander Park. You know, we definitely need to do some improvements. I've had long conversations with Tony. It's great that the Parks and Recreation Department is really looking for creative ideas. We're not competing with private businesses for services. This is the kind of, you know, thing that our parks program needs to be looking at. I just wanted on the record that I'm very concerned from a financial standpoint. We have the money. We already have, I think it's
210.
Okay. I know that's not going to cover this size, the scope of the project that this is morphed into. Maybe there are other opportunities. Our board raised taxes last year, and I don't know what the budget's going to look like this year. I'm concerned about budgeting money from a financial aspect this year after we had to ask the taxpayers to raise taxes last year for this. And I realize that there's probably no good year to do something like this from a financial budgetary perspective, but is there anything we can do besides putting money in the budget for this?
So Yeah, I mean, there's a couple things that still haven't been shaken out. One is community financing, as far as grants are concerned.
Okay. Sponsorship.
And then private sponsorship. Those are two revenue sources. And you'll, not this meeting, but next meeting, we'll have the state of the town address. I think your concerns from a financial perspective and the health of the town mm-hmm. will be allayed.
Okay.
We're in really good shape.
Okay.
And I mean, it's early in this year. I mean, who knows what November and December will bring as far as snow. But we're healthy. We're going to be able to achieve our 20% fund balance. Conservative look, we're probably looking at maybe a 1% bump, 1-2%.
Okay.
I won't commit to a sub cap limit because the cap is 0.65. It's not even a percent. Typically, it wasn't last year. It was 0.65. But even through a good chunk of public financing with this project, we would still be within that threshold, 1-2%.
I'm glad to know that we're in a good financial position. I just would be very nervous about coming forward to the taxpayers and saying, hey, we have this great idea, and it's an awesome idea. But I just worried because we did raise taxes last year.
Yep, but keep in mind, we did that so that for the foreseeable future, and it's only going to get better. Unless some unforeseen event takes place where we are put in a very difficult position, you know, barring a significant event like that, you're looking at years of moderate 1-2% increases, and that's really to keep up with the cost of doing business. Now, the bad news is there is a bit of bad news this year. We got our insurance went up 14%. It went up, I think, 14 or 15% last year. That's hard to run. That's on 1-2%. But that's our goal. But as we pay off debt, there's going to be additional revenues that are going to be available to us that we can put into our reserve accounts, and that'll all be spelled out in the state of the town address next week.
So you said the insurance went up
14%.
Insurance.
Health insurance.
Okay. When Hank came in, didn't he say that he was able to get us something? Can you explain that to me? Because I thought that we were saving money.
No, that's liability.
Okay, that was liability.
Yeah, insurance. I'm talking health insurance, okay. Which is Damien Ulatowski is our rep there. So, we're kind of going off on a tangent here.
I have one more question, at least one more, regarding the pond. If we have a 4 to 6 foot deep pond surrounded by cattails, what kind of liability issues do we have with small children coming in here and falling in this pond?
Well, that's why you put an aquatic bench in. So, and there will be emergent vegetation, which one will discourage kids from running into the pond, and two, it will. It's sloped very gradual entrance point, and even where there is a break where the pond gets deeper, that is a relatively gradual. It's not a slope where somebody's going to go in and go over their head instantly. You're going to have to.
So from an engineering standpoint,
yeah, you're going to have to work at it. You're going to have to fight through the cattails. One of the ideas I discussed with Tony about this is in the fall, we bring in the roadside mower, we mow down the emergent vegetation. And we designed the outfall structure so that we can raise the level slightly in the fall.
He wants to go ice skating.
Okay.
Tony. He'll want it for 1 year. Put him in charge of it. That will go away quickly.
Tony would like to have an outside ice skating area in the park.
Okay, so that's an engineering viewpoint I have. I
want to get back
into
the spray park, but this pond and trees, because it's environmentally,
we should be covered
with
it.
Okay.
It's a good thing the way we're handling the wastewater. It's really an environmentally appropriate thing to do. Could we create this? I'm not worried about kids jumping in the water, but can we make this a fishing pond?
We could, yes.
Stock it.
I mean, yes. That would be fantastic.
Cast over to cattails.
No, I mean, actually create a little fishing
pier. Yeah, you could. Yeah, what you would do is you would either put a floating dock in, or the easiest way to do it that I can think of. You do your H stanchions for or a fixed dock, and then have a floating dock at the end.
Because if you're going to have 5 feet of water, you're going to have something.
You're going to have. There'll be plenty of opportunities. I mean, and it won't take long for fish, even if you don't stock it, to establish themselves. Some great examples are the ponds in Radisson. Nobody's ever like that.
Another recreational opportunity in the park.
Right.
Like Clare Park, Luxinger Lane, that area, that pond that's right off of Deep Glade. Nobody's ever put any fish in that, and it's full of bass and sunfish.
Van Buren has a huge pond. They have fish and derbies there. I mean, not big fish. They're sunfish.
But I mean, you could even do a couple floating docks, different access points, so people can get out there and fish. And, you put railings around the docks. I actually did the design of the fishing pier at Chapman Park when I was at B&L. So that's right up my wheelhouse.
So did the size of this stay consistent with what Camillus is doing? Because I noticed we have a rectangular spray park now and not round.
There's reasonings for that. After talking to parkitects from a long-term maintenance mowing, actually utilizing your space better, keeping costs down from a construction standpoint, they said rectangular is
90-degree angles are nice.
Yeah,
but in terms
favorable.
Of square footage, is it the same?
Bigger, actually.
It's bigger. Than
if the town does invest in fishing areas, or fishing, but is there an increased liability there because it's a town pond for fishing? Because we are encouraging kids and small and families to fish there. If something should happen, is the town responsible?
Yeah, that's why you put railings.
I mean,
and I love to fish, but if it's a town.
So I understand your concern. We do live in a litigious society, but if you look at what the village of Baldwinsville has done as far as waterfront redevelopment. Mm-hmm. If you look at the fact that they put in a handicap accessible canoe and kayak structure, I mean, that's cutting edge. Like, I mean, there's always going to be risk.
Yeah.
I think the first thing we need to look at, as usual, is it going to add cost to our liability policy? I would think that it wouldn't. There's always going to be a risk. We're a municipality, and there's a perception that all municipalities have deep pockets.
Right. Does this terrify you?
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
Okay.
No more than, if this was just vacant land and somebody walks back there and falls down and gets hurt, it's our land, we're responsible for it, but we're also insured for it, so.
Okay.
Now the bungee platform.
In one of our
sessions,
we talked about.
I'm gonna get a gondola.
I want to add to the project, but we talked about a continuous bench inside the fence, as opposed to separate benches. And the more people I talk to, the more I'm hearing. Make sure you have enough places for parents to sit, and make sure you have enough picnic tables. And some with umbrellas, hopefully. So we're going to, I don't see any picnic tables that we're going to have.
And this is really
cool. I understand. I just want to make sure that when we get close to the detail, that we do not scrimp on benches, picnic tables.
Absolutely not.
So has anybody had an opportunity, I did this week, to go over to the Y and look at their outdoor pavilion?
No.
This is probably dimensionally pretty close.
Theirs is a little narrower. Theirs is 8 foot. Theirs is only 24 foot wide. I'm proposing 32.
So they actually have bathrooms there, and then they've got like a little bar. I don't know what that would be used for off the bathroom, but so we would have changing stalls instead of bathrooms. We're not anticipating putting bathrooms in here, but a lot of picnic tables undercover can fit in here. Plus, we're proposing a lot of picnic tables with umbrellas on the west side of the kiddie area, the child area. So there'll be a lot of seating there.
That's good, Joe.
Is there any bathrooms in this thing?
There is. There's two men's and a women's stall in the building here, and then there's a family bathroom as well.
Why would you take up this new pavilion? Why would you put changing stalls in that as opposed to just putting the changing stalls somewhere else? Like, why would you usurp the pavilion?
Well, it just utilizes one structure instead of having to build two.
But do you need a cover over a changing?
You don't need a cover.
All I'm getting at is if you've got a pavilion and the spray park's not open and someone wants to rent the pavilion, why would they want to have to deal with changing stalls in that?
I will say this. The front half of this pavilion where the changing stalls aren't is actually bigger than the rotary pavilion. Our existing rotary pavilion. So if the
spray park, it's almost twice that size.
Yeah. So if the spray park wasn't open, they're it's just separate. It's just an area that wouldn't be used if you were renting the pavilion. But there's quite a bit of space underneath the. This is a 50 scale. It is to scale. So you've got, 40 feet in front of the. Changing tables, 40 by 32, that's a pretty big area from a pavilion standpoint.
And do we need changing stalls, though, at all?
I think that's something, well, here's what...
What'd they say?
This is what Parkitects recommended. They said from a cleaning standpoint and from a busyness standpoint, moving some of the traffic away, so when people are getting ready to go and they want to change their kids out of their wet clothes... From a traffic standpoint, it may be best to separate the changing areas from the bathrooms.
If you can imagine 75 wet kids playing in that area with their parents, new kids coming in, kids shuffling back and forth, this facility would be
overwhelmed.
And it would, if you think about it, yeah, kids going to the bathroom and kids changing on a wet floor, clothes going on a floor.
I just think. You're making all the sense in the world, but the parent is going to say, what are you doing? You're going to make me walk all the way over to the other side for one kid to change while the other kid is going to the bathroom over here. Maybe we need to brainstorm this one a little bit more and put the changing stalls between the spray park and the existing restroom. Just so you have, because this parent that's got an 8-year-old, a 4-year-old, and this thing is way off in the boondocks relative to where everything else is happening.
Quite frankly, because of where the utilities are on the site and everything else that's there, we have you can see the patio off of the family room, off of the existing office room there. The only real spot we would have to do something would be between that patio and the what's proposed for the spray pad to do a small separate structure with changing rooms in it.
Well, give it some thought. I mean, I'm not saying absolutely you got
to. Maybe we shrink the size of the other pavilion and accommodate that. Do a small.
I'm just thinking a mom or
an. I understand.
Mom, they can't have their kids in separate locations.
Yeah, maybe you do this as a small. Do it by 20, like a 20 by 24 structure, and you put your vending machines over there too, and then you make this other pavilion, a little shorter, and maybe instead of being 60 feet long, you make it 52.
I would kick that idea around.
We can certainly take a look at it.
I got a couple, probably explain away things. The trees to the west.
Uh-huh.
There are certainly there are going to be a certain number of days that this is going to be. 65, I think, is an estimate as far as potential days that the weather would permit.
Cooperates, yeah.
And of that, you got varying degrees of temperature. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's low 70s, and sometimes shade isn't what you want on a marginal day.
Mm-hmm.
If these trees are blocking what's left of the sun towards the end of the day. Is that going to, will that shade this area to a point where it might be too cold? I'm all for shade in that park because there's very little anywhere.
Yeah, that's something we'll have to, like I said, I sent the CAD file over to Parkitects and asked KJ to have three landscape architects on staff. She said that she'll have them take a look at what I've done.
And also leaves and with a west wind.
Give us, leaves are going to be, no matter what, you're going to have, you know, in the fall, it's going to be, you're going to have to clean that drain, that storm drain out. And, and you're going to have to, you know, there's going to be some maintenance in that regard, no matter what, whether there's...
You know, just to throw out my forestry, consider a ginkgo biloba for those trees.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
They're a beautiful tree, and they're mid-sized. They'll never get big.
Yep.
So they have those long...
No, those are the ones that you park right behind the library, in the parking lot of the library. Those are ginkgos. And that's the size they'll get, a little bit bigger. And what's nice about them is that they'll provide some shade. They're absolutely beautiful trees, but they're not going to tower over this thing.
Good, good.
And that's just one specimen, one species.
Yeah, there's several options. Provide a little bit of shade, a little bit of a windbreak too, was my other thought. Our prevailing winds are out of the west, being that this is tap water. I mean, even on warm days in the summer, your tap water is 63, 64 degrees, you know. This is, you know,
it'll be chilled
a little bit of a wind block isn't going to disappoint anybody, we'll say.
Mm-hmm. And then the only other, and this will get worked out as far as where that monitor station is, as far as, you know, I don't know, especially if we move this, you know, maybe that changes. And the only reason, I just don't know where that ideal spot's going to be, and I'm looking forward to Park Attacks to see what they think. The other thing is the gate that leads out to the east.
To the west, you mean?
Yep, and I'm just thinking public safety and little kids and how close that is to that turnaround. I mean, you know, is it smart to have, you know, is it 20, 25 feet from that gate to a car? I mean, just... keeping an eye on little kids and...
I think that turnaround should ultimately... Yeah,
why aren't the gates at the north and south end of this as opposed to the east and west? I would put them at the north.
That's what I was thinking. I understand why you put the gate to the west for access to a potential... But this whole fence, this west fence, this whole west fence might change someday if we add that.
Yeah. So
you know, you
make it solid at this point.
You might want to go north and south with that.
Okay.
Just so it's not.
I'm open to. Obviously, I'm here for your suggestions. That's why I'm reviewing it with you.
And it's a great plan because we needed something to start with.
No,
so we're taking everything that we've heard.
This is the first step.
Yeah.
I do think, like I said, from what our discussions with Joel will tell you, from our discussions with Park Attacks, I think an attendant is going to be necessary. All the time, it would be, and maybe we take this attendance shack and it goes to the what would be the southwest radius there, where the walk from the existing park office comes up to it. Maybe it goes on that corner, or maybe it goes on the northwest corner. Just as long as they can,
because you can kind of monitor what's going on in the bathrooms too.
That might be a good spot for it. I'm open to suggestions. This was the first thing that I came up with. These are
it's good.
As this project progresses, there are going to be changes. This is a first. This is my first stab at laying this out, and these are the amenities that we want to see.
Okay.
I'm okay with doing the benches around the inside. Honestly, Bob, I think it's going to add quite a bit of the attached fences to the fence around the inside because it's going to be custom work. I think there's going to be a pretty significant price tag associated with that, and I think we can accomplish the same goals with some park benches. Maybe we have to add more park benches. Right now I show 8 in there. Maybe we can get 3 park benches on the if we change the gates, we can get 3 park benches on the east and west side.
I'm not saying they have to be custom.
Okay.
I'm just saying, you know, use conventional park benches, fit them, you know, back them up against the fence, but you put a lot of them.
Yep.
And then add to your list, you know, when I say picnic table, I am not meaning the pressure-treated 8-foot picnic table. I'm talking about something like at the zoo where it's, you know, it's a metal table.
Yeah, the
and you can fit, you know, 5 or 6 people maximum.
Yep.
Because each family is going to be 5 or 6 people.
Yep.
And so you don't want to spend money on an 8-foot wooden picnic table that you can't move around. So there should be 20 or 25 of those things in this thing. Because that's how many people are going to want to plunk down their backpacks with their lunches.
I mean, we have quite, so we just had, what, Tony had, was it 10 or 11 picnic tables made?
I think 11.
I think we had it. We just had 11 made.
But those are those huge monsters.
Yeah, those would be out here.
Yeah.
Those would be out here with like with umbrellas.
But all I'm saying is something small. Like if you go to the zoo, there's these family picnic tables.
Okay.
They're all metal. They're easy to clean.
Okay. I know what you're talking. The great. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Kind of coated. Metal.
Yeah. Expanded steel that's powder coated.
Yeah. You just hose them down.
Yep. They would work.
Sometimes the problems with a big table is you get three or four people take
one whole table.
Exactly.
And nobody else wants to sit
there.
That's
my whole point, Tony. Yeah. For something like this is not a family gathering. This this is not a group gathering. This is three or four
individual
or five
families,
people at any one time.
That makes sense.
Yep. We can certainly work stuff like that into the plan.
I just don't want to get. Yeah, I don't want this to open to rave reviews, which it will, and then you start getting complaints. Oh, there's no place to sit. And there's no place. You know, I couldn't get out of the sun. And where do they want me to eat my lunch? And blah, let's just do it right.
No, and that's that's one of the things that I like about working with.
Another $5,000 or $10,000 to do it right is the right thing to do.
No, I totally agree, and that's one of the things why I think Tony and I are leaning towards Parkitects is. They have landscape architects on staff. They're actually nationwide, but their local office is Ithaca. Ithaca or
Corning?
Corning? Corning, that's right. Elmira, Corning, something like that, yeah.
The other thing we could consider is, you know, this archway just happens to be there. It's a stone archway.
I think we bollard that so cars can't pull in there.
But that could even be shifted. So if this whole pad was shifted 10 or 15 feet to accommodate for a structure in between the bathrooms and the facility...
I mean, we could take. In my opinion, I don't think that turnaround serves any real purpose.
That's just a vestigial kind of a.
You don't need that.
Yeah, I mean that's so. This can be moved to the north, 10, 15 feet if we wanted to accommodate for a structure in between the bathrooms and the and the facility.
So, why Parkitects as opposed to some local Syracuse firm? Do they specialize in these kinds of
things? That's exactly it. They specialize in this type of stuff. They've done tons of local work.
Are they on?
They're on an OGS bid. You know, which to me, from our procurement standpoint, makes this easy.
So do they recommend a particular vendor in terms of the water spray?
They carry the aquatics brand. They were one of the sample boards that Tony put up.
The other thing that interested me about them is, I mean, they have a specific division for spray parks. This isn't some side business where they're just hoping to. I mean. Their customer service.
They're starting a maintenance program for these because they put so many in, so they're going to offer a maintenance plan. You know, come in a couple times a year if you
kind of teach us how to do it,
yeah.
And then after that, then we, you know, we take it over.
Excellent. Is there any chance we could get a couple of glacier boulders and put them at the end of this road?
Yeah, bollards or glacier boulders or something to. I mean, like I said, that turnaround really serves no purpose.
Well, even the park entrance, like if Joe was saying, we moved this 20
feet, lined up.
It's lined right up for somebody coming straight through. So I'd feel more comfortable if there were a couple of
landscape,
big trees old or, glacier boulders. There.
Yep, glacial erratics, I believe is the term you're looking
you
for.
Don't go buy bollards because if we use state money, we got to use the state bid on bollards.
I know.
Been there, done that.
A big rock, a couple big rocks.
Bollards
are stop a car.
Well, and they would want the trail bollards, which are those ones like on the Radisson trails, and it costs like $150 for each post. Then you got to put a concrete foundation around them.
They're, okay. So what's our game plan?
So we'll make those adjustments.
We'll get the comments back from Parkitects, and then you know we'll adjust to those. Bring it to the board again, you know from there it's.
We should still bid this. I mean, we're still going to bid this out.
Yeah.
Because we're going to keep everyone's got to be kept honest here.
We're
not talking budgets with any of these vendors. We're not, you know.
Yeah, we're still going to, I think the best, personally, I think the best way to do this is we purchase because the equipment is on OGS bid through this Parkitects company, we purchase the spray park equipment, the control panel, all the features, and we bid the whole project, all the concrete work, all the site work, all the electrical and plumbing work to a general contractor. The pond, all that gets bid to a general contractor, and we supply the fixtures that we want.
And he can hire a sub to install.
Actually, they have subs available. We could actually purchase under their OGS bid. We could actually have them install. So he does, the GC does all the plumbing, puts all the mounts into the concrete. They come in, install the control panel, install all of the actual fixtures on the spray pad, and help us and train us on how to program the control panel and show us how everything works. And it's all part, all covered under the existing OGS bid. Okay. It makes it really easy for us, and we're not going to pay that additional. I mean, let's face it, we've all been around municipal contracts before. Anytime you have a specialty item like this, sure, the contractor goes out and finds somebody that's experienced in doing it, subs that portion of the project to them, and then marks it up 20%. Okay. that's just how it works. So this is this allows us to get over that 20% markup. Cool. and work through our existing procurement policy.
Okay.
Now, just one more minor point. What is the fence? Is it?
I would do the wrought iron.
4 foot high.
4 foot high, mm-hmm. Decorative fence.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. That's gonna be great. No lighting.
At this, I think we will wire when we wire the. So that's one of the other things we talked about with Parkitects. You can do add-on lights. This is all low voltage because there are controls for the spray elements. That's all low voltage wiring, and you just pull one extra wire to each fixture. If you want to add lights in the future onto the fixtures, you can. We could do some site lighting around the spray pad if you wanted to have a nighttime event. Cobra lights or an exterior light fixture like what we have in the parking lot if nighttime events are something that you would want to consider. I mean, right now our park is dawn to dusk.
I mean, I don't think you need to, but
yeah, that's a good thing to think about.
I think the cold part of it is what really.
But if you're trenching and might as well run the wire.
The cold part of it, I think, is the thing that makes using this at nighttime. It's cold water. You have your temperatures drop. I just don't see a big demand for use of this thing.
Are you running the sun goes down to the pavilion?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Two circuits to the pavilion, and at least one, probably two circuits to wherever the. Attendance offices, so that it's going to be a small building. You're going to want some fans in there, maybe even an air conditioner on real hot days.
Okay, so we're going to put a plan together for what?
So this is evolving. We'll take the comments. We'll take the comments. We'll talk with Parkitects and start boiling this down. And we'll have a better idea of a time frame probably by next meeting.
That's the goal. Yeah. I mean, realistically, we were talking to Parkitects. Typically, these projects are on a fast timeline, 6 months, on a fast timeline. I really want to get this thing right from a design standpoint, from an aesthetic standpoint, and I want it to be a huge success, and to rush it. Yeah. I mean,
there's going to be a tremendous amount of fill and soil that's going to come in here, so you're going to want some time for that grass to come in and fill, or else it could turn into
I think where I'm coming from is that if it's the right thing to do, then, you know, I don't want to put the decision to do it until off to next year. I want to make the decision this year.
Oh, yeah.
I would love, my goal would be to be in a position where we could bid mid to late fall. Mm-hmm. Let the contractor come in, get the earthwork done, get the site development work done, i.e. all the utilities run, and be ready to pour concrete as soon as the weather breaks in the spring. Mm-hmm. And then topsoil and seed, and have good grass established by the time we got temperatures to where kids would want to use this thing. So hopefully we can get good grass established by the, you know, second, third week in May, and you know, have a grand opening, you know, Memorial Day weekend or the weekend before to and have everything, the grass established, nice and green, and
good work. Nice.
You know, that would be, and I think that's a realistic, you know, we're May, if we could bid this thing in late August, with an award in September, that would be about ideal time frame for a contractor to come in, get the site work done, sure, and you know, put us in a position to be ready to do a big grand opening in the spring and have everything be green and nice. I think that's one of the things that Camilla struggled with last year, is they didn't get real good grass established before they had their opening. And I think that's, you know, we heard some of the complaints about it being muddy. I think that's what that's how that happened. That and that site's so flat. There's just nowhere for water to run. I think this whole area is going to need to come up by at least 18 inches, so that you can have some slope to make water run away.
Well, you know, money can buy anything, so I wouldn't, as long as we have it, but so I wouldn't rule out, if you, in certain spots, sod. I mean, if there's really going to be some highly critical areas that have to have grass on it, then buy sod.
Yeah. I mean, I think if the schedule works out right, I think we can get good grass established in the time frame that we're looking to do it.
Yeah, but you know, just it may be for the grand opening, you want to just have that lush stuff that's only sod can do. Anyway,
the good sod. Yeah, because there won't be a lot. There won't be a lot in this area. I mean, well, I don't know. Who knows? Who knows?
There's quite a bit of site work. I mean,
I do have a vendor. Hopefully, we'll have our first donor announcement towards this project at the next meeting, which would provide a lot of that.
It's very
fill,
that material. Yeah.
That material. Since we got you here, let's talk about the West Genesee Sewer District, which is the, kind of the residual of project.
So we have, and I apologize, I got some documentation, and I'll get it to you. I've been a crazy couple days. I have not been able to boil it all down into a good letter and give you the documentation that you're going to need before we make a decision on this. So we have the water quality improvement grant from the Whispery Oaks project. We have 42 houses on West Genesee Street that are included on that force main that already have lateral connections spots. I believe we have, of the 42, I think we have 19 or 20 houses connected. So we're less than half of the houses are connected. The previous administration.
And the one before that.
I'll get there. Yeah. So, and maybe we'll start at the two administrations ago. This project was told to these people as this is going to be, you know, a $1,500 to $2,500 project to have these grinder pumps installed and connected to your home. Well, of the people that I've had it done, the lowest cost I've heard is just over $4,000. And some of the houses that are 200 feet off the road have spent up to $8,000. It's a pretty big nut for these homeowners to have these things installed. You know, we've given them extensions.
And it was mandatory once this was established.
I'm getting there. Yeah. So our town code says that if there's sewers available, you got to tie in. County sanitation code says the same thing. This is a big nut for these people. It is. The average homeowner doesn't have an eight grand kicking around that they want to spend to put in a sanitary sewer grinder pump so their taxes can go up, and they can
You have to pay the county fee.
You have to pay the county $450 a year county fee. This is a pretty big economic decision for these folks. They're already paying more in taxes for the debt service, for that force main going in. There's some pretty heavy sediment from the residents that I've talked to in, I don't want this, I'm never gonna do it. We have the ability, if the town board wants to tell Tim Woolsey, our code enforcement officer, to go out and cite all these people and drag them into court if they don't connect by a certain date, we have that ability. I would say that a more palatable solution would be to say to folks, hey, you have to have your septic tank pumped and inspected by an engineer and your leach field dye tested. If you don't want to install the pumps at this time, and then require them to file a deed covenant restricting transfer of property until the home is tied to the sanitary sewer system. If they didn't go that far, then you got to cite them, drag them into court.
So you make their future sale of their property contingent on that upgrade.
So the big thing, if people don't do this, they're our grant window is closing. The grant window is going to go away. We're not going to have that funding right now. We have 7 pumps stored at the highway garage, and we have the ability to take delivery of another 14 pumps under contract.
I don't mean to interrupt, but I just walked in. How many do we have installed so far?
I was
ballpark
19, 20. Yes. They're taking up room at the highway barn. I mean, that's the bottom line. So we're storing them.
And we quasi own them.
We own them.
We do. The district owns them.
Well,
the district is supplying the pump.
The water quality improvement grant is paying for 85% of the pump, and the other 15% is funded through ponding. So these folks are paying 15% of the cost for the pump through debt service that they're paying in their tax bill.
So they're partial owners of these inventoried systems.
Gotcha.
So we're in a position where we have to, one, so Dave can set this up for long-term financing. Right now, and this is financed under a ban. We have to make a decision. Do we want to, like I said, send out a letter? Hey, everybody's got to be tied up by October 31st, or the code enforcement is going to cite you, and you're going to have to come appear before a judge. Do we want to, and then we. Do we, and at that point, do we just take delivery of all the rest of the pumps and knowing that they're going to be installed? Hopefully a majority of them will be installed fairly quickly and it's not an issue. And the grant will reimburse us for 85% of those pumps, and the debt service is paying for the other 15%, and these folks are paying that 15% through the debt service in their tax bill. Do we want to give them an opportunity to prove that their septic system is functioning fine?
Can we do that, though? I thought one of the requirements by the county was that if there's a sewer...
It's town code, too. It is. The county. I've spoken with the county health department. They have never cited somebody for it. There's many instances around the county where there's houses and there's sanitary sewer in front of them that came through after the fact, and people never connected. And then
there's no way I could feel comfortable with having our code enforcement officer go out.
Yeah, they don't enforce it. I'm very uncomfortable with that myself, but ultimately we're coming to bring it to the board, and it's the board's. I'm not code enforcement. I'm engineering. I feel for these people. I understand. If it was me, I would be. Because I was, this thing, who knows, maybe there would have been a referendum on these improvements if the true cost of installing these pumps was known. Mm-hmm. It's
unfortunate in a lot of different ways. I mean, but we're faced with a grant that's going to run out
I mean, these people, if these people don't do it, they're losing the opportunity. Unless we take delivery of all these pumps and wanna store them until all these properties change hands and are ultimately the pumps are installed.
It's strange because it's.
We could all be dead and gone by the time.
I know, and it's.
I don't know the mechanism.
Except for maybe.
Gonna say, I hope I'm not dead.
But we're inventorying, so we're carrying inventory.
So what is our deadline?
Our deadline right now, the grant is closes out at June 30th of 2018.
So do we? What's preventing us from, aside from having the place to store them, what's preventing us from taking possession of the pumps?
Nothing.
Gene, how much room is it taking up over there in the highway to have seven of them, the pumps?
Just got them over in one corner.
Yeah, then
could you take another 20?
I'm not going to pay for them.
No, it'd actually be 14. It'd be 14. The wet well is outside. All the electronic parts, the pump, the control panel, everything else is inside
plastic.
On the shelf. What's that?
Is
the wet
plastic?
Well is plastic. Yeah. It's
Do
HDP.
They degrade in open air over time?
No, they're HDP. I'm trying to think of the word, but it's chemically treated HDP, so it doesn't degrade.
About the technology, does it become obsolete over a certain amount of time?
No, they're
last forever.
I won't say they last forever, but the wet well lasts forever, and the pump. So they have this system on Horseshoe Island in Clay. It's been in service for 17 years. At year 15, they had a couple pumps that they had to rebuild, They're starting to see some pumps that they're rebuilding. We actually have two cores in inventory. We've had to swap one. We had one pump that we had a problem with. We have a contract with Town Mechanical in place. We own the pumps, and when the pumps are placed, we take an easement on the property so that we can service them, and the district pays for all service of the pumps. So when a pump core goes bad. We have a contract with Town Mechanical. They come out, swap a new pump in, and the people are back in service. Town has somebody on call 24/7 to be able to do this.
So
buying the pumps is not a waste of money.
Well,
it could be.
Could be.
Yeah.
Well, but if they never get installed.
Right.
Yeah.
But over time, the houses sell.
Yeah, but I've got a question. How do you force the homeowner to put that in his deed? How do you force him to say?
Well, you're gonna either that or we're gonna cite you and drag you into court if you don't put it in your deed. I mean, right now we're giving you a break, and that we're not dragging you into court right now.
And then they've got to file that deed. That's recording.
We would file that deed, and the district would pay the recording costs.
Okay, because it's probably a couple hundred bucks a pop just to record.
Yep. Or you could push the recording fees off onto the homeowner.
I just think that I think it's a difficult.
Difficult I mean, it is. It's and the ask to. I personally don't, you know. Hey, I got into engineering to solve problems for people. I don't like causing problems. So I hate doing it. I don't like
how,
being.
How much are these grinder pumps each?
They're about $4,200.
So the homeowner would pay.
15%.
15% of that?
Through debt bond, yeah, the debt service of the district.
That's their only cost.
And the
installation cost.
And the
you got to pay out of pocket.
Which
cost.
Is the big problem.
Yeah.
$8,000.
Yeah, so the houses that are off the road 200 feet, which a lot of the houses on the south side of 370 are a significant difference.
So they're still going to incur
off the road.
That big expense.
Yes.
Yeah.
Even though they get the deal on the pump itself.
Yeah.
Then they
got to
pay to decommission or something.
Yes, that was included in the $8,000 number that I mentioned there.
I thought there was something with the grant about the purchase of the grinder pumps. Yeah. I thought when they first bought these pumps, I thought we were only supposed to buy the pumps we were using. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, that's
years ago.
That's no, that's the DEC, because the delivery is set up in 14 pump increments. The DEC, when we've taken, each time we've taken a 14 pump increment, we've submitted for reimbursement, and the DEC has reimbursed us for that expense.
Okay.
Well, is it likely that if we were to buy the remaining portion of these pumps and store them, is anybody going to say, well, why aren't you installing them?
No, we that's not included in the what was approved with the district improvements. And for West Genesee Sewer District Extension 1, the map plan and report, and the for the existing homes in the West Genesee Sewer District that never had sewer, they had a sewer district improvement report that was adopted by the town, and installation was not included.
I mean, but what is a grant? Who, I don't know who.
New York State DEC.
10 years from now, is DEC ever going to say, well, how come you haven't installed those pumps we bought for you 10 years ago?
They could.
I don't know if they could or not.
There's a lot of money they're putting in our pocket to make this happen.
I don't know if they could. I mean, once they pay, I don't think they can. I mean, they review pretty, we have to send them pretty significant documentation that we took delivery of these. And
yeah, but I can't imagine that there's not an audit at some point that they could do to see whether or not the grant money that was supplied to us actually did what it was supposed to do, and that's to put people on sewers. My personal opinion on it is the two previous administrations chose to kick the can down the road.
That's what it sounds like.
But this grant opportunity is
closing.
So we need to make a determination, how flexible do we want to be with these folks, and do we want to be in the inventory business? Do we want to hold inventory? 85%, we own 85% of these pumps.
Yeah, but what, let me ask you this. By doing that, what's going to make these people go ahead and move forward? We're sitting on seven of them now that we've had for
3 years.
So
where I was going is we need to have a public information meeting, invite these folks in, let them know in detail, these are the letters that went out. Give them copies of all the correspondence that was mailed to them. Bring them up to speed on where we are at the grant levels, and put it, I don't mind if we have, if Gene says they don't take up a lot of room. You know, we are going to have a cold storage facility that's going to give us a lot more space to accommodate holding inventory if we wanted to go that route and be flexible. Whenever Onondaga County passes legislation that's problematic or can impact a lot of people, the last time something that impacted my business was, they took them out. But they were people that tied into stormwater going into sewers connections in their homes. There was a date that they wanted those done by, then they backed off that because they realized that there's going to be thousands and thousands of people that were going to have to do this work, and then they just put a contingency in there that if you sell your home, that has to be rectified. You can't have your stormwater drains flowing into the sewers.
They could tie that into their closing costs, can't they? Can't they have or add that?
Well, if we put that,
their closing.
Tony.
You could do it that way, yeah.
You could do it so that they don't have to do it. It's almost like a lien on the property. Yeah. Before they sell the property, this work has to be done.
They got to make it right.
And they got to make it right. So it doesn't impact them now, but when they go to negotiate the price of their home, someone who's looking at that is going to say,
how much is this?
So doing it as a local law? I mean, and how do you notify, how does the prospective buyer get notified if you do it as a local law? That's why I think the deed restriction might be the only way to do it.
Deed restrictions.
But at the very least, we have to have this public, yeah, because one of the things I think has been lacking through this process is involving the public. As far as, you know, this was something that was pretty much forced on these folks. If the septic system hadn't failed, they wouldn't have run the sewer main. And maybe someday they would have, but certainly, you know.
I completely agree with you about the public meeting. I'm just one board member, but I feel really uncomfortable with the idea, and I realize the grant is going to be closing next June, but I don't feel comfortable sending a code enforcement officer saying that you need $8,000 worth of work that needs to be done on this pump, or you're going to have to go before a judge. I mean, like Al said, most people don't have $8,000 just sitting around that they can spend on something like this. Somebody's furnace goes out in the middle of the winter, and I've seen people really struggle to try to find ways to pay for this. And that's a necessity item. If you don't have heat in the house, your plumbing freezes.
Well, yeah, but not having a toilet that flushes is...
but it does flush right now.
No, but so at the very least, though, we need to let these people know that, right. Look, we this grant's running out. We can get an 85% reimbursement on the pump that you're eventually going to have to put in either way. How do you feel about that? They're paying a percentage of it through their district charges.
Right.
So they
what's the cost of the pump?
About $4,200
each pump.
Yep.
Yeah. So I can't imagine anybody saying no. Send the money back, because that's really what we're talking about. If we decide that we don't want to take on any
in
more
essence,
inventory,
people did. They haven't hooked up.
Right. No, but you know, but
knowing that 15% of it.
Buy my pump and store it for me when I save enough money.
Yeah.
Well, so here's another question. They all those residents in the district have been putting money towards pumps
that other people have installed.
That other people have installed, so it gets even more. The web gets even more.
Yeah, you got to think about it that way too. I mean, quite frankly, the people that haven't hooked up. Because they pay the debt service on the pumps that people have hooked up, they're paying them for a portion of somebody else's pump. Mm-hmm.
It's not.
I mean, it's their choice. It's their choice. They chose not to have the pump installed.
Didn't have $8,000.
It's really lousy.
Right. Yeah.
It's a lousy situation. It is. I mean, in West Tennessee Sewer District, I saw what happened in West Tennessee Sewer District 2. We've changed this. The contractor installs the wet well, installs all the lateral piping, installs the wet well. We're going to do a separate contract in June and mount the control panels and wire the control panels and power the pumps. So all the homeowner has to do is decommission their septic tank and run a gravity line from their septic tank to the pump. And we're going to locate the pumps as close as possible to the existing septic tank. To keep costs down for homeowners, you know, if you do it with when you do it that way, I don't anticipate cost being more than $2,000 because there's not a lot of labor to do that that work.
And all the homes, including the Whispering Oaks homes, up to this point that have installed these things, they all paid for the installation. Nobody got it free, including Whispering Oaks.
Whispering Oaks doesn't have pumps.
They don't have that.
They have a gravity sewer.
Because they have gravity.
They have gravity to a large pump station.
So they came out like real winners here.
They did.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, no one won because they're paying $600 or $800 a year in debt service.
Yeah, they're paying almost, it's just over seven, right, Dave? Just over $700 in debt service a year.
That's in debt service. Then they're paying
the sewer treatment charge and the district maintenance charge.
So they're paying like $1,500 a year to have a sewer.
I think it's like a little over $1,300.
Say they came out
winners.
No one did.
How much money is left in the grant?
Although they didn't get
it. They don't have that number off the top of my head. I'm
enough to get the
it's close.
Dave, what do we
it's
got
enough to
in
get
grant?
Whispering Oaks 2 done.
I don't know the number.
It's enough to get Whispering Oaks 2 done and pay for the rest of the pumps. I just don't have it off the top of my head. I wish I was more prepared
for grant that's going to expire?
Yes.
And so, David, what have we been doing year over year? Do we refinance this?
Yeah, we just renew the ban.
So it's not a huge amount, but it costs us money every year for the last how many years?
Four.
No.
Well, we went the first 2 years, didn't pay anything on it because you can go 2 years on a ban.
So 3 years. No, 2 years.
This is, we're into our second year of payment.
Yes,
right, so every year we refinance, it costs, what, $500? So what we were trying to do is make a decision and then bundle all this into a
We have all these other small bands that I want to
We think we can save money. We think we can save money at a more competitive rate if we can bundle these things. So I'm not saying we need to make a decision tonight, but we needed to have an in-depth discussion so that you're aware of what's going on. Tony, I'm probably going to be talking with you and working with Al to come up with some plan that's as flexible as possible, because it seems like what I'm hearing from the board is we don't want to send Tim out with
a bunch of citations.
That's not our intent. What we want to do is clean this up and be as flexible as we can. I mean, I think it would be a waste, a tremendous waste, to send money back, grant money back, when these people have to do the work. At least get the equipment.
I agree with that.
At least get the equipment, take care of 85% of the cost of the equipment, which they've been paying into anyways, and then go from there. Okay? All right.
That sounds like the fairest thing to do.
MS4 report. You want to talk about that, or
is it done?
Yeah, just finished. Well, I got one question. I don't know, Gene. Any documentation, Gene? Nothing. Okay. Our municipal record keeping is
lacking.
Well, I don't have anything at this point in time, but that's my last piece that I have to fill in on. We're making progress on all of our other measurable goals. We're marginally compliant, which is right where I want to be on that. MS4 is a federal mandate that's passed to the states, and the DEC passes it on to us. The new permit that comes out next year is even more stringent and requires more record keeping. It actually is going to require us to clean all of our catch basins at least once a year, which we can't do with the equipment and staff we have. We get approximately 100 days of during a season where you could do this work, and that's counting rain days, taking out rain days. I mean, that's a liberal estimate, and we can clean 6 to 7 catch basins a day.
And this is coming where, out of the EPA?
Yeah.
Doesn't Donald Trump know about this?
I didn't say that.
I wonder if that'll be impacted.
No, I think somebody. I think we should be making comments. I mean, I think the EPA is asking for things that they can do to help businesses. Well, this is something you can help municipalities with, and in turn help everybody's taxes. It's a big burden on municipalities. I mean, the new permit that the EPA has mandated the state adopt. Actually, it's supposed to be adopted this year.
I was being a little bit facetious, but maybe you and the other town supervisors should talk about this and then send John Capco a note.
Absolutely. Saying,
I know that there's other towns have had problems because the requirements are that you adopt your law, and then you enforce it. You, the town.
The DEC. So all these general stormwater permits, the DEC charges annual fees for. They charge initial fees for any additional impervious area. It's like, I think it's almost $2,000 an acre they charge for additional impervious area that you're adding, plus another $200 annual permit fee. They're collecting big money on this, and they pushed all their responsibility of review and enforcement on the town and don't share any of the money. I mean, it's a huge unfunded mandate. This is the definition of
people to do it.
That's a racket.
We simply do not. So,
is it inspect or clean?
Inspect and clean.
No, they did roll back the waterways. The EPA rolled back the waterways, and I know the MS4 had something to do with that.
There's been no, as far as the MS4 requirement, there's been more stringent requirements enacted by the EPA at the end of the Obama administration. So, but quite frankly, we get about 2,300 catch basins in the town. If we get 100 good days in a season, and we clean 7 a day, and it takes 3 guys. You got to have one guy manning traffic, and 2 guys working that vac truck. So a third of our staff is gone just to that.
Sometimes a backhoe.
I mean, it's a third of our staff that is going to be dedicated to this for the entire season, and we're still not going to accomplish what the mandate is in that we're cleaning every one every year. We're not even going to come close. We can't do it. I mean, we would need 4 vac trucks and 12 guys.
Do you meet regularly with the other supervisors?
Yeah, I got a meeting next Wednesday. I mean,
this is right for a letter to our representative in Congress.
The other thing that we're going to be talking about, there's a going back to the paperwork that we need to back up our report. We sat through a presentation software company called Dude Solutions, which is basically a GIS kind of online-based
work order tracking. So what you do is you give the guys that are out there an iPad with a fillable PDF form on it. When they clean a catch basin, they fill out the form, they save it, and it automatically generates a report that we can use for the documentation for this MS4. But it's going to take a little bit of training for the guys, but it's going to make us more compliant with this requirement.
Yeah.
And same thing with the street sweepers. You clean the street, and some of the requirements, they want to know how many pounds of debris you took off every street. We don't stop at every street and dump away. It doesn't happen. It's not going to happen. And that's an unrealistic expectation of them. But
unfunded mandates. There's a perfect one.
This is an, that's an unexpected, can't be accomplished. We can't dump to every time we street.
Your hopper 3 yards.
You
fill a third of it.
It's not a realistic. Yeah, it's
a guess to me.
It's a wag at best.
All right, so you're going to get the information that you need from Gene tomorrow. Okay, good. All right, so I guess we're running out of time here. What I'd like you guys to do?
Give a quick update on Fios or Time Warner.
Go ahead. Sure. Okay.
So me and Joe met with them last week. They don't want to change anything until Fios's contract comes up, and Fios's contract doesn't come up for another 2 to 3 years. I just was amazed. Joe was amazed. We couldn't discuss or touch anything because they said that we can't make any changes until we change it with Fios. Fios will say the exact same thing regarding Time Warner. So it looks like we're on hold until Fios's agreement comes up, or unless Fios is willing to open up their contract a little bit early.
It's ridiculous is what it comes down to. They wouldn't budge on anything until the Fios contract. Yeah, I'm just setting up the next conversation.
One for you, one for me. What's this?
That's an original. All right, so so to sum up, basically, Spectrum didn't want to move because they said that anything that we change would create an uneven playing field. My counter was, you've already enjoyed the length of your agreement. Verizon still has 2.5-3 years left in theirs. You just happen to be first up. So I'm content leaving it the way it is until both are up, if they want to go that route. We were entertaining a 1% bump in the franchise fees. They said that would be fine. But we would like to do that when you mandate Verizon do the same. And I said, well, that's, what are we even talking about then? We're not negotiating 3 years down the road. We're negotiating the current contract.
Well, the other thing we were looking at doing was shortening the length of the contract, because the contract is 10 years. And Joe mentioned during the negotiation, so much changes in the course of 10 years. And if we have to wait 10 years for Time Warner and then 10 years for Fios, and it's going to probably be 13 years because the contracts aren't up at the same time, we're running into the same issue. So shortening the contracts would be huge for us.
We asked for 6, maybe 7. They're allowed up to 15, and they said that we're already extremely lucky to have 10.
That's what they said to us. It'd be interesting to see what happens.
And then we asked for a live drop for the island. so that any concerts, any events going on the island could have a live feed point to PACB. So she seemed open to that, of all the things we asked for.
That's a cheap one for us.
So, it's a gimme. Other than that, I wanted to get in front of you. We don't have to talk.
Can any of this help with getting anything at the highway garage?
No.
I was going to say, can we ask, is one of the demands that we could ask for to provide high-speed internet through all of the industrial park, or is that not?
High-speed internet is not a negotiable item and a franchise fee. They, even though they use the same infrastructure, it's a different service altogether, and it's excluded. The PSC allows them to exclude that. Good news, though, we've been working with Dave.
The good news is the businesses on Loop Road and the fire district offices that don't have reliable internet and phone service, Verizon is going to run a loop of fiber down Loop Road.
In May or June.
Yeah, it's anticipated that construction will start in May and be completed in June, and those businesses will be able to have reliable phone service.
And the fire department. And, I mean, Belgium Cold Springs will have a reliable connection.
Reliable connection for phone and internet.
And next year, we're on the
list for the rest of the industrial
60
park.
Road, 60 Road and the rest of the industrial park is going to get files. So there's movement there, which is really good. Other than that, I wanted to get in your hands. We funded, but have not established a part-time code enforcement officer. It is the season. It's the building season. Tim's flat out. He put together a job description based on an old deputy codes enforcement officer civil service position that no longer exists. But he looked at this, meld it into a job description, take a look at it, tell me what you think. That office definitely needs help. I think they're 30 days back on permit reviews. And just keep this in mind, this was last year's numbers. I don't know how we did. When I looked at that code enforcement officer office last year, we processed two less home applications than the town of Clay, and they have five code enforcement officers. So, and that's a position that, if done right, can basically fund itself, because the work that they do, the permits that they generate, the inspections that they do, usually generates revenue. And one last thing to consider, we need to take a look at our in lieu of parks fees. The Village of Ballinsville charges $500 whether it's an apartment or a house. They both say it has the same impact on parks. They have ours is $150.
And $350, that's for minor subdivisions, $150, major subdivisions, $350. There's other municipalities that charge 2% of the value of the lot. So if the lot's worth,
let's put that on the agenda to talk about that. That's
yeah, let's we'll put that on for next week. Absolutely. Or 2 weeks from now. Okay, set up.
Thank you.